Hello and welcome back to Parity Radio. In this episode, I speak to a gentleman called Gary Whitworth, who is one of the design team leaders at a Manchester-based agency called The Chase. I'm going to discuss a few things, as we normally do, including his time in education at the University of Central Lancashire. He interned a few times during his studies, so we kind of touch on that and if it helped him kind of land a job after he graduated sort of thing. We touch on student portfolios and sort of student work, and we touch on sort of his work at The Chase, day in, day out kind of thing. And yeah, I hope you enjoy. So yeah, our studies all the same. So for the people listening that don't know yourself, could you give them a little bit of a rundown as to who you are and what you do?
So my name is Gary Whitworth. I'm a design team leader here at The Chase. Chase Creative Consultants here in Manchester. So essentially means I kind of help co-lead a team of designers working across lots of different projects, from big corporate branding projects down to also we design stamps for the Royal Mail. So lots of different projects, big and small. And I help kind of co-run a team here at The Chase.
So yeah, kind of jumping forward but backward. So going back to where things sort of started for yourself, could you touch on sort of what got you interested into sort of art and design to begin with?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. It's funny, really, because there's probably no particular moment. There was no kind of like light bulb moment, I suppose. I think I've always, even as a kid, was quite a visual person, quite a visually expressive person, very interested in creativity and also logic and thinking and those kind of ways. It sounds a bit silly, but it was kind of, as a kid, it was either drawing or reading. As a young age, it was kind of all I did. And then as kind of I grew up, everything I was kind of interested in, looking back weirdly, it's like, had like kind of a visual element to it that I was kind of drawn to. So, you know, whether that was sport, it was kind of like, enjoyed the sport itself, like football, but then also obsessed with kind of the programs and the ephemera and kits and everything like that. And then similarly, you know, I was into skateboarding and BMX. And then again, the visual side of that, so all the brands and all of the kind of visual expression of that culture was really drew me in. Similarly, you know, music. Used to play in bands when I was younger. We used to play guitar and drums, but then it was kind of all like punk and heavy metal is what we were into. So again, it was all of the, you know, album covers, gig flyer posters, all that kind of stuff we used to love. So everything kind of I was into had this visual element to it that I was also drawn to as part of being interested in that. So it was weird. There was no kind of like one thing, and it's not, you know, I'm not from a particularly like creative family. You know, my parents weren't, you know, artists or anything like that. And my sisters now were quite, you know, ordinary background. So it wasn't like I had someone there who was kind of like going, oh, you know, get into this and do that. I think a lot of it was just me and my group of friends were all quite creative as well. So, and have remained quite creative. So I think it was that kind of culture that I had in school and young age that kind of developed that as well. So yeah, no one particular thing, just lots of little things.
I don't know how long you've been kind of a wrestling fan, but the last episode I did, I spoke to another lad called Stephen Waring, who's kind of, he's into wrestling and that. But I was mentioning just how like the logos and that, and I think, because I'm trying, I've been working out why I'm kind of interested in the things that I've been kind of doing the same thing. I just like, you know, looking at like the SummerSlam logos and the WrestleMania logos and all the big type and that. I was like, I wonder if that's just kind of pushed it forward a bit or something. I don't know, personally. At least.
No, I think you're right because, I've been, Jesus, and it's one of those funny things. Like, I've watched wrestling since I was about 8. But the first thing I do remember very vividly about why I enjoyed it as a kid was how it looked. It was the present. So I remember the first, you know, two kind of memories of it were Hollywood Hulk Hogan with his big kind of like lightning tight and the black and white NWO outfit and Sting as well. It was always the visual. And then again, it was the logo. So it was like the typography of how Hollywood was written. And it is a very, very visual medium. You know, it's not, it's kind of call it that, but like, it's all about the visual, that it's about being over the top. And that was kind of the beauty of it, was that it was so in your face, you couldn't ignore it. And again, you know, that was kind of, as a kid, sketch in my sketchbooks, you know, in my word books, drawing out the different kind of logos, you know, Roar is war and all that, you know, all the stuff that goes with it. It was great. It was, yeah, that was a part of it as well. The covers, video covers, and some of them are awful, you know, they're awful people. What was great about them is there is an inherent understanding in that about what, it's a bit like junk food, you know, they're not amazing pieces of food, but they're manufactured because they connect and because they like it, even though it's not good for you, it just resonates. But yeah, it's, that was a big one as well. And it still is, it, you know, it's funny to say, but yeah, it's still ring true.
Yeah, it's just something I've been going through my brain myself recently. And I also mentioned last time I spoke to him, I was like, it's sort of, you start with your Hulk Hogan's and then you move on to like your DX and your Rock and that. And you've also got like massive logos and T-shirts. Whereas you look at a lot of the merch that they have now, it's kind of like just a bit of text on a black T-shirt. It's kind of scaled back quite a lot, hasn't it? I think personally, at least.
Yeah, I mean, there used to be some like wrestling brands like in the past 10 years that have tried to kind of go down the route of trying to make wrestling t-shirts cool, which is a very tough job to try and do, but it kind of goes against what it is all about. So I've got like a collection of some like old wrestling posters that I just picked up off eBay because I love the old style, you know, almost like boxing posters from like the 70s and 80s. And what's great about them is the typography is obviously, you know, letterpress, because it's quick to, you know, develop, you know, to get loads out at once. You know, it's really just not done stylistically, it's really done for convenience. But the ways that the letters work, they're so impactful. It's always, you know, large caps, you know, block, you know, very strong sans serifs, bright colors. And then the lettering has obviously been used that much, the, you know, the metal press, that kind of cracked and edged. And I was always quite representative of what you're about to see. You're about to watch two very barely damaged blokes pretend to pace each other for 30 minutes. And that, you know, how could you visually represent that through type? It's like, well, bloody hell, the posters do it so well. So I end up collecting a load of those, which are just kind of cluttering my house at the moment. My wife wants to sort them up, but it's but yeah, I think it again, it was that interest as well. It was the interest in the sport and the entertainment aspect of it, but then the visual side of it was just, you know, a treat as well. And it's weird, as you say, it's weird how many designers, graphic designers, are secretly or wrestling fans.
I'm bringing you all out. I'm getting you on podcast and get you talking about it. So yeah. Jumping back to where I was, I understand you studied at the University of Central Lancashire. Do you have any sort of stand-up memories that jump to mind when I mentioned that, and anything that sort of set you on the course that you were going to go on afterwards?
Yeah, so I went to UCLan, which is in Preston, and it weirdly, I'm trying to say this in non, I went to UCLan kind of accidentally. It wasn't my original intention to go to Preston Uni because I'm from Chorley, so I'm from just down the road from Preston. So at that age, you kind of want to just, you know, spread your wings and get as far away from home and go and explore. And that was my intention. But actually going to Preston Uni was the best choice I ever could have made, because I wouldn't have got to where I am, and I wouldn't have had the education that I did had I not go there. And it is, you know, for my money, like the best course in the country. But yeah, originally I did a foundation degree after college, which was a blessing and a curse, because it was kind of 2 years of kind of learning design, but a lot of it was focused on the tools. It was focused on like InDesign and Illustrator and Photoshop, and with a bit of thinking, but not too much. And then the bonus of doing that course is you were guaranteed a place on the design course in Preston, and you'd get fast tracked to the second year. And I remember that the kind of big moment I remember is the first day go into UCLan. So I'd just done my 2 years of foundation degree. I thought I had a good idea of what graphic design was all about. I was like, right, great. You have that kind of first day. And they'd set us a summer project, which was to create an alphabet, to create a kind of a typeface, but not using a computer. You had to kind of hand make it, handcraft it somehow. I thought, okay, I've got an idea for this. And it was to use, I like the idea of just using ordinary objects, something just really simple. And I was like, right, what could it use? Settled on using a shoelace. And I kind of took quite a slightly artsy approach to it. I just created, constructed like a little like kind of box where I could set a camera above it, and I would just drop the lace and see how it landed. And with like very minimal manipulation, tried to make it into a letter. Well, I say minimal, but you know, cheated a bit. But I thought it was really interesting, really nice. And I liked the idea of it being quite incidental and uncrafted. So I did all this, photographed this, pasted it onto a couple of sheets of A4, did a nice background and gave it a title, which was a big mistake. I think I called it, my old tutor, John, still brings it up. So I'd written Lace by Gary Whitworth, which sounded like a really like poor man's kind of cologne or perfume. And I turned up on the first day thinking, all right, this is good, this is interesting, I'm sure, like, and put it on the wall, and then proceeded to just look around the walls of the studio and see all of this amazing work that all the other students had done, who had done the first year. So obviously I was going into second year, and I didn't have the benefit of all of the teaching that they'd had in the first year, which at Preston's very much focused on the thinking behind, you know, design and so on, and creating that logical kind of lateral thinking. So I looked at the work and it was all beautifully crafted, looked great, had a great idea behind it, and mine just kind of felt undone, felt a bit like, you know, a dropped lace. It was just kind of disregarded, just didn't seem great. And I was like, oh my God, like, I'm in over my head here, I don't know what I'm doing. I just immediately kind of panicked. And they kind of looked at it and was like, oh, made a quip about the name, which again, John, my tutor, still reminds me of to this day. And I kind of felt at that point, I was like, oh, actually, that I didn't know. I didn't have all the answers. I didn't know what it was about. It wasn't just about, you know, creating a nice logo or, you know, do some fancy type in Illustrator. There was a lot more to it. And from then on, I kind of really dug in and basically kind of tried to do the first year whilst doing my second year. So I asked for like some of the briefs that they got in first year, and I tried doing them, and I got the reading list and went to the library and took out Smile in the Mind and The Art of Looking Sideways, all of these books that were quite seminal to the thinking that Preston did. And yeah, and then just from then, that was just kind of spurred me on, because I was like, I need to catch up and I don't want to be behind. And I want to, you know, I was really inspired by all the work, and I thought, well, you know, that's what I want to do. So yeah, so that's kind of the main memories, that first day of feeling a bit out of my depth, and it kind of inspired me just to crack on and learn more, because yeah, it was a bit of an eye opener.
Am I correct in the fact that you did a number of internships during your studies for different agencies? And if so, but do you think they played sort of a factor in sort of setting you up for industry life after you graduated?
Yeah, again, so the beauty of the course at Preston was it was, I think it was like the first sandwich course in the country. So when it was set up, you do your first and second years at university, and then you have the sandwich year, which is your third year, and that's in industry. So you go out and work for a year in industry, and then you come back and do your final year and your degree show. So it was quite unique. I think a lot of other universities have started doing that now, but whether students do it, because of you still have to pay half your tuition fee. So at the time, that was a lot less than it is now. But yeah, so that was quite unique about Preston, and it really helped. It definitely helped me post university. So I went down to London, which again was a bit of a culture shock, because I was originally going to stay in Manchester, couldn't really find any placements in Manchester, there was a few people in my year who'd already kind of snapped up, the ones that like Here at the Chase and True North and Love and all of the different agencies that were, you know, around at that point. So my only choice was to go to London, which luckily I had a friend living in Crouch End. I could go and crash with him on his couch for what ended up being nearly a year. So probably did my back no good for all that time. But yeah, and I was kind of, you know, Andy, one of my other tutors, Andy Bainbridge, he'd suggested a few names to me to get in touch. Because again, the beauty of Preston was loads of graduates have gone on to do massive things. So there was a huge network of people that it opened doors to by just saying, I'm from Preston. And they were like, oh, right, great, brilliant. Why don't you come and have a chat? So I sold my car, my Midnight Blue Vauxhall Corsa, sold that, packed up, moved down to London, and immediately just like hit the phones, hit emails, getting people's creative directors' email addresses from all the places that I wanted to work at. And then that then turned into getting internships at The Clearing, which at the time was kind of quite a young studio. They'd only been around a few years. But it was the creative director, Andy Howell, he was ex-Preston. So he kind of took a bit of a shine to me, and he was brilliant, really, really great person to work under. And so I was there for a few months. I went to Duke Gibbons, which again was a really prestigious packaging agency, worked at Elmwood. So I got to work at all these agencies, and I'd been told by another designer who was in the year above me, Mark Arrowsmith, he'd said, try and get internships at different types of agencies, because this year is like, the beauty of that year was I could just do whatever I wanted. You know, I didn't have to, I wasn't trying to get a job. You know, I wasn't doing a placement hoping that by the end of it, they'd hire me. If anything, I couldn't, even if they wanted to, I was going to go back to uni. So it just meant I could have a bit of an experiment and be like, right, well, I'll see if I can get a packaging, you know, placement. And so I went to Duke Gibbons, and I spent 2 weeks, you know, designing nicotinell packaging for their Russian audience, you know, really bizarre kind of like briefs that you would get in there, and worked for branding agencies, worked for, you know, kind of more advertising style. So, and that helped me understand what I wanted as a designer, what I wanted to do, because it meant that when I left university, I did my final year, I knew, oh, I don't want to do packaging because it's too technical and it's not really what I'm into. I want to do corporate branding. I want to be involved in this and that. So it was a huge help, and I learned a lot about presenting my work, how to present work, learned a lot about crafting, how to do it at speed, because, you know, university, you get lots of time in the real industry. You know, I'd get, you know, a tenth of the time to do something, and so you had to think on your feet. So I learned a lot, and plus, you know, it was a great life experience living in London for a year. It was awesome. Got to meet loads of cool people, see lots of different things. It was invaluable, really.
Have you ever been tempted to go back down?
A couple of times, yeah. I mean, a lot of it's personal circumstance, really. I mean, there was a point where, you know, I did think about it, whether, you know, we do have a London office, and there was a point I thought about that. But it's always been something about Manchester, and this area has kind of kept me here, really. I really enjoyed being in London, but then a few of my friends kind of moved back. So, you know, it's kind of moving down there would have meant, you know, being like less connected to other people. But I'm quite happy kind of going every sort of being able to come back. Like, it's nice being able to like dip your toe in and stay for a few days and be like, oh, actually, I'll come back to the north. And it's been tempted a few times, but it was just nice at that time to keep it like that. Yeah. So
this is sort of the midpoint of the show where I ask everyone sort of the same question, and it's called the Hall of Fame. It's sort of ripping off Desert Island Discs, but not, but sort of at the same time. But it's just the idea of, if you could pick one thing that has sort of been the main inspiration for your own career, like the heartbeat, be it, you know, a person, a song, piece of artwork, movie, experience, whatever, what do you think that would be for yourself?
Oh, it's this is a really, really tough one. So this is, yeah, I struggled with this because it's so, I mean, there was one I thought, oh, kind of a pint of beer, but then I've stopped drinking now, so that's kind of gone out the window. But yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, one that was always think I was my granddad was a big supporter of what I did, and he was great because he always pushed me to kind of to become a designer because he knew that's what I wanted to do, and he was a big believer in, you know, how enjoying what you did, taking pride in what you did and craft and stuff. So he was always kind of someone I thought, especially early on, about, you know, why I want to be a designer, and about creative standards, about detail, about, you know, being a good person to work with and stuff. He was all of those things, and that he was so supportive in the early stages of going. When I told him, you know, I've got a job being a designer, he's like, well, that's amazing, you know. And he's like, oh, you don't worry, you know, you can do whatever you want, you know. He was a plumber, so it was but he was always kind of like, oh yeah, it was easy in my age, because if you didn't want to do plumber, you just walk the next door down and be a joiner or next door, whatever. But he's always amazed by, like, the kind of between doing a creative industries and working in quite a creative field. So he was always excited. So yeah, I think he's, if he was a person, it'd probably be him. He was always like a good inspiration for me, and a really clever man. I've always, you know, very interested in people and things, and that's partially where I've probably got that from, again, inquisitive nature. So yeah, I was trying to think of an object at one point, but I couldn't narrow it down. I think as well, like, things change. So like the person I was becoming a designer, you know, at uni, or, you know, studying at uni, is very different to now. So, you know, even like if it was like a book or something, it would be a different book back in 2013 than it would be the book I'd maybe choose now in 2024. So, but yeah, probably my granddad's a good season.
No, that's a good one. I like that. So yeah, as you mentioned, after graduating, you would begin working at the Chase where you are now. Can you remember sort of the first days you walking into the office and sort of any feelings or anything you had?
Yeah. Oh yeah. So yeah, the first day was a funny one, really, because I really, even though I'd done my internships and placements in London, I didn't really know what to expect, because I'd never done like kind of a little studio tour or anything like that. We do have lots of students kind of coming for, you know, a little tour around and like portfolio chat and stuff. But then I hadn't been, I didn't know what it was. I'd only been for my one interview, but that was kind of walked in one door, walked back out the same door. I didn't really, you know, see much of the place. So I was really nervous, because at uni, the Chase was like, you know, the pinnacle. It was up there with kind of like Pentagram and Johnson Banks and all the other agencies. It's like, oh, the place you wanted to go. So I was quite like, you know, on edge that I was even got this far. So I was kind of like, wow. And yeah, I didn't know what to expect. I remember coming in, not really knowing where I should be going, where I'm sitting. And then the old office used to be behind. So compared to where we are now, it used to be on the other end of Deansgate, in a place called Parsonage Gardens, which is this lovely, like, hidden green area of Manchester, which, if you've, you know, anyone who's been around Manchester, it's not got a lot of green space. So this is like the pocket of green space in the city centre, behind what used to be called Kendall's, which is House of Fraser, this huge building. And it was this great little spot, and they had the top floor office, and it was a big, almost, it was not circular, but it was a big track that kind of ran around the building. So there was different rooms that you could walk through, and you could very easily get lost. And I remember sitting down, and I was sat next to Pete Richardson, who was creative director at the time, who's just retired. And he'd interviewed me, and he gave me this brief straight away, which was, we worked on a exhibition for the RIBA, so the Royal Institute of British Architects. We're doing this huge exhibition on British architects throughout the ages. And that was kind of our first brief. We've got this briefing session. And I just remember not knowing fully what to do in that first stage. I was like, right, do I, you know, how do we come up with an idea? And a bit like being in an exam, you're kind of looking around going, what's everyone else doing? And obviously they've got other bits and pieces to do. I've just got this one thing. So I was, you know, took it in. I remember thinking about it all day, coming up with getting reference and getting some books out of the library that they had and stuff, and trying to think of all these different things. And basically just being a mixture of kind of panicked and excited at the same time, constantly like, and but it was really fun. And it was my first experience of kind of an agency like that, that was quite close, everyone's quite close knit. A lot of people here in the Chase have been here for a long, long time, so known each other for a while. And then weirdly, I only found out afterwards, but the building the Chase used to be in was actually, so where I started my first design job was actually the same building my granddad started his first plumbing job, where he started his apprenticeship. So it was a weird kind of like full circle where I told him, oh, it's this building. And he said, oh, that's the building I had my first job. Yeah, so it was a really weird kind of circular moment of like of that. And he told me this story about how in his first week he was doing the plumbing in the basement. And when he was reaching up to move a pipe, he found this little like box behind one of the pipes. Opened the box up and it had a revolver in it with some bullets. And this is obviously back in like the, would have been 50s, 60s. Even earlier probably actually. And he didn't know what to do with it. So he went to his boss and said, oh, I found this. And so the bloke was like, where have you found that? Said, oh, I've just found it behind this pipe in the corner of the basement. And he just said, listen, Eric, just put it back. Pretend you never saw it. And we'll never speak of it. And he was like, I don't know whose it was or what it was. Like, it's not someone you he'll say. Yeah, so that was quite, I don't think it was way before the Chase. I don't think it was. Exactly. Yeah, I didn't find any guns on my first, but yeah, still time. Yeah, so.
So yeah, could you touch on sort of maybe how the landscape's changed a bit in sort of your 10 years or so working at the Chase, and sort of has your day to day workflow changed, and what sort of a normal work day like for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose yeah, it's probably two parts. I mean, personally, yeah, things have changed quite a lot because since I've like kind of progressed, you know, from you know starting off as an intern and then getting to where I am now, there's a lot of different responsibilities, you know, you take on, and you know, working with clients more and handling work and being in charge of, you know, what gets done and when and who's, you know, who's helping out and what. So that's obviously been a big change. And emailing is, I think you steadily just see how many emails you get during a day is a good progression of how long you've been somewhere. You know, I think, you know, when you start off as an intern, I think I had like 2 emails in a week. And now it's like a busy week. And then now it's like, you know, 2 emails before you get in at breakfast, you know, kind of thing. I think a lot of stuff that's changed kind of just generally is the pace of things. Because of the lot of tools that have developed over the years and everyone being able to create compared to, you know, something great compared to in the past, things have become a lot more immediate. So the development of, you know, even things like Canva that's been around for a while now, and Adobe do Adobe Express and TikTok, and the ability to make stuff on your phone that years ago would have required, you know, all this different equipment. Even in that 10, 11 year span that I've been, you know, in the industry has, you know, sped everything up massively. So, you know, the time it takes to do stuff or the time you get given to create things has decreased a little bit. Which on one hand is fine because we've got faster tools to create stuff, but I do think creativity is not defined or done by a, you know, a computer tool. You know, it's a human process to come up with these ideas. So that becomes a little bit harder. You've got to be a bit more quick off the mark. That's been a big change. And obviously, social media's had a huge impact on the type of work and how you create work, and also the type of work you create, especially in film. So when we create film, when we're working on film projects, which is a lot, you know, for a lot of things we do, you've got to consider so much now. And in terms of kind of attention spans, all those kind of things that you've got to kind of fight through to say, oh, no, actually people will watch a 2-minute ad or they will watch a 2-minute film. It doesn't have to be 10 seconds. If you don't get it, it's still going to work. A lot of that you've got to fight through for certain projects. So I think it's immediacy and attention. That has been the huge thing now. And then when it comes to kind of awards and stuff, it's been purpose, you know, why are we creating something, which is very difficult in this day and age to kind of combat from that perspective. You know, I feel like a lot of work, there's quite a bit of work now that get created to put a, you know, client or a, you know, company in the light to make them look like they're doing something in the world that's, you know, having a positive impact, which obviously we aren't all people, you know, clients and companies we work with do hopefully have that positive impact. But it has had a huge impact on messaging, on the types of projects, on the kinds of narratives that we're displaying. I've seen that quite a lot in not just, you know, not necessarily our clients, but in other clients in the industry. That seems to have taken a big skew now as to what they want to say, taking that focus off the product or off the company themselves, and actually the good that, you know, this could do and how that makes people feel seems to be the big focus now. Whether that's going to change, go back, I don't know, but it seems to be the big difference in the past 10 years. So yeah, less time. But in a way as well, that can be a good thing. You know, sometimes if you're given, you know, wait, you know, thinking back to that first day, you know, I had a few days to come up with concepts, ideas. You know, I didn't need all that time. And in fact, sometimes that becomes a hindrance because you start second guessing yourself. You start maybe going too far down one idea and then you actually explain it and people don't get it or don't like it or it doesn't brief. So, you know, immediacy can be a good thing. Sometimes it could be, you know, a hindrance. But yeah, that seems to be the biggest change. Everything's quicker now.
Yeah, you can imagine it kind of continuing to speed up as well, can't you? With, you know, I don't know if you've forayed into like the AI space and that, but it seems to just be getting even quicker and quicker.
AI is obviously such an interesting subject on one hand and a very kind of frightening one on the other. We have worked with it a little bit at the Chase. Like we did, so our film team created an AI, or created a couple of AI music videos for a band that we work with. And they're amazing, but they are not wholly reliant on artificial intelligence. They are what's getting fed into it, and they're relying on the creativity of the people using it. And I have no qualms of using AI as a tool to enhance something, especially, you know, stuff like using it as a tool to, you know, upscale imagery or to sharpen things. You know, I think that's great, massively helpful. It's when it blurs that line between, well, who is the creator? Is it, you know, the designer using it as a tool, or is it actually just using it as a crutch because they can't be bothered? Do the hard work, you know, that's the difficulty. We use it very minimally, and it's very much for us trying to not get involved in a sense that it takes over the creative process. It's allow a creative process, and our philosophy that the Chase has had for, you know, 30, nearly 40 years still rings true. But it's, I think you're right. The speed of things, people expect things a lot quicker, and AI is probably only going to enhance that further. But I just hope that it doesn't become the be-all, end-all.
Fingers crossed, yeah. So, yeah, I assume sort of in your tenure, you may have looked at some student portfolios and things like that during your time. Do you have any ideas on what sort of makes a good graduate portfolio or even just a good designer?
I mean, for a good graduate, it's not always about the work necessarily. I think people get really hung up on certain things that I don't think are important. which is, you know, how things look, how things are presented, i.e. using really ultra flash mock-ups, but the idea behind the work is not very strong. We're an ideas kind of driven company. We're all about like the core idea. That was how I was taught in uni. That was how we run as a company. That's our philosophy. It's the idea is everything. And I think in a portfolio, the ones that stand out to us and the ones that kind of get to, you know, a stage where we if we're looking for placements and stuff, we invite them in for a chat. Tends to be the ones where they showcase like a good grasp of ideas, of lateral thinking, of interest approaches, and then crafting on top of that, as you know, something to show attention to detail, even if it's not perfect, that's fine. Because our kind of thought is we can teach how to craft, you know, as long as you've got a good grasp of typography or, you know, illustration or whatever that thing is, a good eye, a good vision, that's fine. We can teach the rest. It's the core idea, the core kind of approach to the brief, whether that's a brand or whether that's a, you know, piece of literature, whatever it is. If you can show you've come up with an interesting original idea, concept to tackle a problem, then that to us is exciting. And whether it looks perfect or not, that's not, you know, that's not something that we're going to, you know, say, oh, that's not professional enough. We know you're a student, you know, you need to learn. We're happy to teach. And the other side of it is personality. Having a compatible personality, you know, this is someone you're going to spend, you know, nearly 40 hours a week with. If you don't get on with them, then it's not a, you know, it's not going to be a good fit. I think that's as well that people, and that's from both sides. You know, I've been to agencies and interned, and you know, the creative directors have said the same thing. He's like, you know, it's, you know, if you don't get on with us, that's as, you know, much problem as if we don't get on with you. You know, it's people business. So yeah, so for me, it's really seeing that a core idea, a very strong idea, design idea, then expressed beautifully. Is how I'd approach it. The other thing as well, we get loads of digital portfolios, but we very rarely get anything physical in the post. And appreciate, you know, it costs. But when I was starting out in uni, we always would send something because it's quite unusual. You don't get much physically, even from professionals, photographers or illustrators. So anytime you get a piece of physical print or anything like that, really stands out. And actually, even if it sits on the desk or sits on reception, you know, someone might pick it up, it might lead to something else. So that's always something I tell students is you've got the money to be able to do a very small printout piece of your work, it will go far.
Yeah, that's a nice one. I've not had that before. That's a good piece of advice, though, I think. And yeah, sort of beginning to round up, I ask everyone the same thing at the end. It's very cliche and cheesy, but if you could go back in time and give yourself one piece of advice, knowing what you know now when you first got started, what would that be?
I'd probably say worry less and just try and focus on yourself rather than others. Yeah, the worry less point is, there's a lot of overthinking of my own work, overthinking what other people are going to think, overthinking their overthinking. You know, it's kind of, it was too much getting in my own head, and actually really just needed to say, well, just calm down. And, you know, if you like it, you like it, and that's a positive. And if others do like it, great. If they don't, it's not the end of the world. I think, I was quite... I was very easily kind of distracted in uni with burdening myself with what others might have thought of my work, and using that as a way of kind of pushing myself somewhere else. So I'd probably just tell myself to worry less, because I have confidence in your intuition, because I think that your instincts what makes it is important. You know, a designer's instincts are really important. It's the difference between knowing, you know, you just know naturally that's going to work. I don't know how that happens. it's happened a lot more over the years of me being a designer. I believe in that intuition. You know, I think David Carson used to talk about it a lot in his work. You know, it's just intuition, knowing what's going to work and what's not going to work. I think that's the same in a lot of industries, but in design, I think it's quite important to, you know, go, well, you know, I can explain why I think this is going to work, but ultimately it's a bit of a dark art as to whether it is going to work or not. And you've just got to trust my instincts. You know, that's why clients are paying you. It's because you've got that taste, you've got that intuition, you've got that judgment, and you know that's what makes you unique from everyone else. So I would say it's kind of trust your instincts, worry less, and don't, you know, think as much about what other people think. Just carry on and everything will be fine. You know, at the end of the day, it's only graphic design. It's not, yeah, it's not there. We're not working for the UN, so we're all right.
No, that's quality. And yeah, super, super lastly, have you got anywhere people can kind of find yourself online?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram and I don't really use Twitter much anymore. Threads, I think I'm on that. So yeah, I'm just down as Gary Whitworth. For years, I've been meaning to make an Instagram that's just my design work. I might actually get around to that this year. So I'll put that on there. And then, yeah, if other than that, just follow us at The Chase. I think it's _The Chase_ on Instagram. We post a lot of work on there as well. So yeah, follow us on there too.
Quality.